This presentation is brought to you by Fried Hardeman University and is shared using a Creative Commons license, meaning some rights are reserved. For more, visit fhu.edu/lectureship.
Well, I think Brother Hester, Dr. Hester's kind remarks.
Yes.
I appreciate Allen's. He and I have been friends a long time. He said that my classmates were going to sit over there and make faces at me while I spoke. I hope they will. Any faces they could make would be an improvement over the ones I had. Alan did not tell you that the second year that we were students here, that he and I and my roommate, Wayne Emmons, and his roommate, Dr. Clyde Woods, all lived out in town in the same house. And we had a lot of fun that year. I appreciate having the opportunity to speak at this luncheon. I love the restoration principle. I love the restoration plea. And I love the restoration movement. I love the old preachers, the ones who started the movement. And I love it, and I love them because it was a back to the Bible movement. It was not the intention of the restorers to start a new church, a new denomination. They wanted to restore the church of the Bible. I love and appreciate the restoration movement, but I'm a member of the Church of the Lord.
Amen.
Yep.
I'm a member of the New Testament church. The restoration principle, the restoration plea, the restoration movement is simply an effort on our part as humans to get back to and to maintain the church of the New Testament. Now, that's not a part of my speech. That's just off the top of my head, but it's something that I think is important, and it's something that I...
There's quite a bit off the top of your head.
I only have so much time. And I've got a lot that I want to say. And Dr. Sam has suggested that I leave time for questions. So, enough said.
That means you can't think of anything to say, brother. Yeah.
In the 1960s, Dr. J.D. Thomas, who was chairman of the Bible department at what was then Abilene Christian College, published a series of sermons of men whom he considered the great preachers of the day. Those 12 men were Basil Barrett Baxter, George Bailey, Athens Clay Pullius, M. Norval Young, Frank Pack, Willard Collins, Roy Osborne, John Bannister, Gus Nichols, Jim Bill McIntyre, William S. Bonosky, and B.C. Goodpasture. If you're familiar with those names, you'll recognize that six of those men lived east of the Mississippi River and six of them lived west of the Mississippi River. Of the six who lived east of the river, five of them lived in Nashville. One of them lived in Alabama. Of the six who lived west of the river, four of them lived in Texas. Two of them lived in California. I had the privilege of hearing and therefore knowing to some extent at least 10 of those 12 men. I never heard M. Norval Young preach. I never heard Frank Pack preach. But I did hear the other 10 of those great preachers of the day. I will talk about two of those men today, time permitting, but I want to talk about some other men who were not included in Dr. Thomas's list of great preachers of today. I would remind us that not all great preachers are widely known. Not all great preachers are brotherhood names. Jesus said that greatness is determined by service. And so the greatest preachers among us are those who serve our Lord and the Lord's people and the world of lost humanity in the most effective way. As I talk about these men today, I want to assure you that I am in no wise name-dropping, because most of the men that I will talk about are men that every one of you also knew. And you could talk about them just as well as I can. I'm not going to talk about them biographically. I'm not going to be telling you when and where they were born and where they worked or what they did. Rather, I want to speak anecdotally. I want to tell you about little things that I knew about them that I hope you will find interesting. All of us probably knew and heard Marshall Keble. We always got a kick out of the fact that Brother Keble would say, "I speak promiscuously." Brother Keble liked a big word. He liked to use a big word when he could, even though he may not know exactly what it meant. And he might not use it in the right context. But taking Brother Keble's word, I want to speak to you today promiscuously about some men who, in my judgment, were great preachers. The first person I want to mention is a man who, for the brotherhood at large, did not have a brotherhood name. He was not widely known. But were it not for this man, I probably would not be standing here today making this speech. His name was Paul Simon. He lived in Northwest Florida. He was born in Pensacola. He baptized my dad in 1948 when I was 10 years old, and I well remember my dad's baptism into Christ. From that moment, the church became the center of our life. Paul Simon became a close friend to our family. He became a mentor to our family. As Sam indicated a few moments ago, our family, my mother and dad, my sister, brother, and I moved from Northwest Florida to Florence, Alabama. That move was made because of the influence of Paul Simon. Brother Simon was the president of Mars Hill Bible School, and he was the preacher for the Mars Hill Church of Christ. Brother Simon, in many respects, had the heart of a child. He was a man in whom there was no guile. He loved the Bible, and he loved to preach the Bible, and he quoted the Bible when he preached. On more than one occasion, I have heard Paul Simon quote the entire Sermon on the Mount in a sermon. I heard him do it at the Mars Hill Church in Florence when I was in high school. I heard him do it at the Henderson Church when I was a freshman in school here. When Brother Simon resigned from Mars Hill, he moved to Henderson and served the local congregation here for 2 years. He was the preacher when I came to Freed Hardeman in the fall of 1955. When I graduated from high school in the spring of 1955, Brother Simon gave me a gift. It was a little leather-bound copy of the New Testament. It was inscribed to me in his superb penmanship. On the flyleaf, it has Hugh Fulford from Paul Simon, May 27, 1955. This little Bible, this little Testament, is over 55 years old. I carry it in the glove compartment of my car when I'm having to wait for Jan or in some other situation. I pull this little testament out and read from it. At the 1971 Freed Hardeman Lectures, John Paul Simon was giving a presentation. John Paul was the son of Paul. Brother Gardner introduced John Paul Simon. John Paul made his speech. Brother Gardner came back to the podium and said to the crowd, announced to the crowd, just a little while before John Paul made his presentation, word came that his father, Paul Simon, was killed in an automobile accident near Boonville, Mississippi. Brother Simon was trying to get from Pensacola to Henderson in time to hear John Paul's presentation. But a winter storm had swept through the Mid-South, and the roads in northern Mississippi and North Alabama were covered with snow and ice. And Brother Simon lost his life in that tragic car wreck that day. That happened on Monday, February 8th, 1971, Monday of lectureship week here at Freed Hardeman. That was 40 years ago to this day that Brother Simon was killed in that car wreck. I still remember the feeling that washed over me when Brother Gardner made the announcement that Paul Simon had been killed. John Paul knew before he made his speech that his daddy had been killed. He wanted to make his presentation anyhow, and he did. As I talk about each of these preachers today, I want to give a word or a phrase that in my mind summarizes the kind of person that preacher was. And the phrase that I would use to characterize Paul Simon was people person. Brother Simon, in my judgment, was a people person. I want to talk now a little bit about Brother B.C. Goodpasture. We all knew him as the editor of the Gospel Advocate from 1939 to 1977. I first heard Brother Goodpasture here on the lectures at Freed Hardeman. I was impressed with him even then. He had this aristocratic bearing. He seemed, to use a Tennessee expression, standoffish, aloof, unapproachable. But in the years that passed by, I learned that that was not the case. And I'm honored to be able to say that in time, I became a good friend of Brother Goodpasture's. He and his wife, his second wife, Freddie, came to Mobile, Alabama in 1973 to conduct a meeting at the Pleasant Valley Church where I was then preaching. Brother Goodpasture preached some of his great sermons, some of the sermons that J.D. Thomas had published in what was the climactic volume of those sermons of the great preachers of the day. Brother Goodpasture was a lover of books. He is said to have had probably the largest private library of any gospel preacher. Our days during the meeting would be spent going to the used bookstores in Mobile. He could go into a bookstore, walk around, and size up pretty quickly what was in there, what was of value and what was not of value. In the afternoon, after we had visited the bookstores, he always wanted to stop at a pancake house not too far from the motel where he and Freddie were staying and enjoy one of his favorite treats, apple pie a la mode and coffee. And more than once I saw him slip two or three packets of artificial sweetener in his coat pocket to use later on in some other situation. Brother Goodpasture was a great storyteller. He would regale our members there at Pleasant Valley in the evenings when we would meet for a fellowship meal before the services by telling stories. He knew a lot of stories about Brother Shrigley, F.B. Shrigley, who was one of the editors of the Advocate. Back in the day when they had a front page editor or an editor for this department or an editor for that department. He told about Brother George Pepperdine inviting him out to Los Angeles to speak on the Pepperdine lectures. And Brother Goodpasture said, Brother Pepperdine, I can't come. I can't afford to take 3 weeks out of the Advocate office to come and speak on the lectures. I'd need a week to drive out there, a week to be there, and a week to drive back. Brother Pepperdine said to him, well, you won't have to drive out there. All you have to do is get on a plane in Nashville, and in less than a day, you'll be in Los Angeles in just a few hours. Brother Goodpasture said, you don't understand. I don't fly. I don't ride in airplanes. I would have to drive. Well, Brother Pepperdine started teasing him about that. He said, Brother Goodpasture, more people are killed in car wrecks than in plane crashes. It takes a lot more faith to get into an automobile and start driving across the country than it does to get in an airplane and fly across the country. Brother Goodpasture said to him, in that case, Brother Pepperdine, I guess I've got a lot more faith than you have. We moved from Mobile to Shelbyville, Tennessee. And that fall, we had Brother Goodpasture to Shelbyville for a homecoming service. He had been his first local work as a preacher after graduating from Lipscomb was in Shelbyville, at what was then the old Main Street Church in Shelbyville. Brother Goodpasture had preached there for about a year and a half in the 1919 and part of 1920. He and Sister Goodpasture came on Saturday afternoon. They spent the night with us. We enjoyed having them. I never saw Brother Goodpasture that whole weekend without his full suit on. I don't think he slept in it that night. But when he left to go to the bedroom, he still had on his suit and tie and suit coat and everything. When he came out the next morning, he had it on. Brother Goodpasture was an asthmatic. And he forgot to pack his asthma medicine. He thought Freddie would do that. She thought he would do it. So neither one of them brought it. I remember taking him uptown to Shelbyville to a drugstore to see if we could find some over-the-counter kind of medicine that would take the place of his prescription medicine. He also forgot to bring his sermon, his outline. Brother Goodpasture didn't preach from notes. He didn't preach from an outline. But he always reviewed his sermon before he preached it. He'd go over it 3 or 4 times. I remember him saying one time that most of the time, by the time he got through writing his outline, he had it memorized. Wouldn't that be nice? But he reviewed it in his mind, and he still preached a great sermon that Sunday morning on heaven. That was a homecoming service, and he chose to talk about heaven. Someone who did not like the way Brother Goodpasture was editing the Gospel Advocate, and there are always those kinds of people around, aren't there? Ask Alan. He probably gets letters from people who don't like the way he edits the Spiritual Soul. Well, someone who did not like the way Brother Goodpasture was editing the Advocate said to him that he was in a rut. You are in a rut. Brother Goodpasture said his response to him was, "It is better to be in a rut than to be in either the ditch of liberalism or the ditch of radicalism. So if I've got to make a choice, I'll choose to be in a rut." If I had to pick a word to identify B.C. Goodpasture, it would be the word wisdom. I viewed Brother Goodpasture as a man of great wisdom. The next person I want to talk about is one that Terry Gardner could talk about a whole lot more intelligently than I can. And he talked about him this morning at 8 o'clock, and I'm sorry I did not get here in time for Terry's presentation about Foy E. Wallace, Jr. But I want to talk to you a little bit about Brother Wallace. The first time I heard Foy E. Wallace, Jr. was in 1959 when I lived in Louisville, Kentucky. He came to Louisville to preach in a meeting. I had heard of Foy E. Wallace. I had read Foy E. Wallace's writings. I knew the name, and I was anxious to hear him. Jan and I and our little boy, less than a year old, went over one evening to hear Brother Wallace. He had preached about 30 minutes on blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And I thought, well, Brother Wallace is going to preach a series of sermons during this meeting on the Beatitudes. Wrong. He preached a series of sermons on the Beatitudes, all right, but he preached them all that night. I later learned that the Beatitudes was one of his favorite sermons. Kingdom principles and Pentecost pointers, he called it. He preached that sermon at the ladies' Bible class when he came to Mobile in 1974 to conduct a meeting. There's where I got to know him the best. He started the meeting on Sunday morning and preached about 45 minutes that morning. The meeting closed on Wednesday night, and that night he preached over 2 hours. His wife was with him during the meeting, but she had suffered a stroke several years before. She was paralyzed. She was not able to attend the services of the meeting. He would always see to it that she was comfortably situated in the motel before he would come to church that night. On about the last night or the next to last night of the meeting, as my family and I were driving home, our older son said, "No wonder Sister Wallace is paralyzed. She has had to sit through all of those long-winded sermons for 25 or 30 years." During that meeting, I drove Brother Wallace down to Dauphin Island, south of Mobile. Went by the motel to pick him up. I was dressed in just casual clothes. Brother Wallace was dressed in a suit and tie, dress shirt, and that ever-present Texas hat. We drove to Dauphin Island. He walked up and down the beach, fully attired in preacher regalia. But he seemed to enjoy the salt air. He seemed to enjoy being away from the cares and the anxiety of his wife's care for a little while. We drove back to Mobile, across Mobile Bay, over to the little town of Spanish Fork, and had a nice seafood lunch and a long visit. Brother Wallace sat there at the table and took the rolls that were left over from our lunch, split them open, spread butter on them, and took packets of sugar and dropped in them and ate them. I offered to buy him a piece of pie or a piece of cake for a dessert. No, he said, this is what I want. I just thought it was unusual that he had that kind of taste. Brother Wallace possessed what is sometimes referred to as the Wallace wit. In that first sermon, this may be too unsophisticated for some of you folks. If it is, forgive me. In that first sermon that I heard Brother Wallace preach in Louisville, he told about conducting a tent meeting in eastern Kentucky where they had a question box. Anybody could write out a question, turn it in, and he would answer it the next night. He said those people up there didn't have a very sophisticated way of phrasing things necessarily, and one question that was turned in one night was this: can a woman go to heaven without a hat on? Can a woman go to heaven without a hat on? Brother Wallace said, he answered it this way: well, of course a woman can go to heaven without a hat on. She can go to heaven bald-headed and barefooted if she wants to, but she'll look better on the way if she has something on both ends. Terry Gardner, whom I mentioned a moment ago, sent me an email about a month and a half ago about something that Brother Wallace said in another sermon in Louisville back in 1950. I call this Foy E. Wallace Jr. on preaching. Brother Wallace said, preaching that gets the right results has to be drastic. It takes surgery. And whenever the surgeon's knife is needed, a rubbing doctor won't get the job done. I'm not a masseur in my preaching. I'm a surgeon. And I try to keep the knife sharp enough to cut as deep as it needs to be done. We don't want to get anyone mad these days, and we have become masseurs. However, some problems can only be cured through surgery. That said, we don't want anyone swinging an axe, and we all certainly ask our doctor to only cut as deep as necessary. There is a time for diplomacy, and there is a time for surgery. I think that summarizes Foy E. Wallace Jr. as a preacher. He was tender-hearted. People sometimes thought that he was harsh and hard, but he was tender-hearted. That was manifest in the care of his wife. It was manifest in the care of the fact that when John Bannister, one of those 12 great preachers that J.D. Thomas chose, needed surgery, Foy E. Wallace Jr. drove to Oklahoma City, loaded John Bannister up in his car, drove him to Scott and White Clinic in Temple, Texas, saw that he got the surgery, brought Brother Bannister to his home, Brother Wallace's home, for him to recuperate. People need to see the other side of Foy E. Wallace Jr. The last time I ever saw him was when he was preaching in a meeting in Morrison, Tennessee. He and Sister Wallace were staying in a motel in Manchester, I believe, but it could have been McMinnville. At any rate, I drove from my home in Shelbyville to the motel, visited with Sister Wallace a few minutes. Brother Wallace and I went and ate supper together, and then I drove him to Morrison for the service. His feet were so swollen that he could not tie his shoelaces. He just slipped his feet into his shoes, and we went on our way. The old warrior was tired and just about worn out. was the last time I ever saw him. If I had to pick a word or a phrase to describe Foy Wallace Jr., it would be immense, immense knowledge. I want to talk now about G.K. Wallace. G.K. was the younger cousin of Foy E. He was baptized by Foy E. Wallace Jr. His son-in-law, Ben Zickafoos, is sitting over here. Ben had the honor of trying to teach me something about family and community health, or personal health and PE, or something like that, Ben. I took some courses under Ben. It was in one of Ben's classes that I discovered I needed glasses. That's another story. It doesn't have anything to do with this speech, so I'll forego it. I first heard G.K. Wallace in a meeting when I was in high school in Florence, Alabama. He came and preached in a meeting at what was then the Poplar Street Church of Christ, now the Wood Avenue Church of Christ. I later knew him here at Freed Hardeman as a beloved teacher. Brother Wallace could give some interesting chapel talks. I remember one that he gave on Elijah, a man of like passions with us. And he drew a number of parallels between Elijah and us, and how that Elijah was just like us. One of his points was that Elijah was afraid of a woman. Elijah ran from Jezebel. He was a man afraid of a woman. He came to the Carnes Church in Knoxville in 1961 when we lived there. Sister Wallace came with him. They stayed with us during a week's meeting. What a joy it was to have them in our home. Brother Wallace did great preaching during that meeting, though at that time Carnes was just a very small congregation. He never used a note or an outline. He would open up his New Testament, I think probably the American Standard, and he would read a text. He would explain it in its context, and then he would begin to apply it, draw lessons from it. Lessons that were practical, lessons that were simple, lessons that were helpful, lessons that were beneficial for those who were members of the church, lessons that taught the sinner what he or she needed to do in order to be saved. One morning, Brother Wallace went out to get the newspaper and he inadvertently locked himself out of our house. When the rest of us got up, Sister Wallace, we all started looking around. We couldn't find Brother Wallace. Where's Brother Wallace? Nowhere in the house. Finally, one of us opened the front door. There he sat on the front steps of the house, reading the newspaper. He got up, came in, gave that little grin for which he was so famous, and he said, "I didn't want to disturb you by banging on the door. Just wait till you wake up and get up and get back in." He often said that he had to get his voice from Sears and Roebuck. He had to use an amplifying system. He did not have an especially strong voice, but that does not mean that he could not hold an audience's attention. Last year when Alan spoke at this event, he talked about some of the great teachers he had here at Freed Hardeman, one of whom was Brother Wallace. And I remember Alan telling this, though I had forgotten it until he mentioned it, that Brother Wallace's approach in speaking was, start low, go slow, then fire! And that's the way he preached.
It was, yeah.
He would start low, he'd go slow, but he would fire, and no one could miss the fire of G.K. Wallace. He told about being invited to some town in northern Texas to conduct a meeting, and it was wintertime. And when he arrived, there was a big snow on the ground. The local preacher met him at the train station and said to him, "Now don't you worry, Brother Wallace. I know there's a big snow on the ground, but we're ready for the meeting. And I'm going to see that you get to the meeting house if I have to carry you there on my back." Brother Wallace said to him, "That won't be necessary, Brother Horton. I wouldn't want the brethren to think that I was Balaam." He was invited to hold a meeting in Kansas. He lived in Kansas and preached in Kansas for many years. That's your home state, isn't it, Ben?
Yes.
When they arranged for the meeting, they didn't take into consideration that it would occur during the wheat harvest. Brother Wallace went for the meeting, but all of the men were busy harvesting wheat. The meeting was poorly attended, a few women and children. Brother Wallace preached a couple of nights and he said, "I'm closing the meeting tonight and going home." He said, "All of you farmers out here in this part of Kansas are so filthy rich that heaven doesn't appeal to you." And he says, "It's so hot in this part of Kansas this time of the year that hell doesn't scare you." So he closed the meeting and went home. Brother Wallace was the first guest speaker on the Herald of Truth radio program. The first guest speaker. Someone said to him one time, "Brother Wallace, we're tired of hearing all of these old basic first principle sermons." Brother Wallace said to him, "You may be tired of hearing them, but you're not through." If I had to find a phrase to describe G.K. Wallace, it would be analytical and incisive. Analytical and incisive. Now I wanted to talk about Gus Nichols. And I may come back and talk a little bit about Brother Nichols in a minute. I wanted to talk about Paul A. Matthews. That's another name that would not be considered a brotherhood name. But I think Jay Lockhart could tell you some things about Paul Matthews and what kind of preacher he was and what kind of encourager he was. I'll not talk about Brother Paul Matthews at this time. I'm going to move on over and talk about Brother Marshall Keeble. I first heard Brother Keeble also when I was in high school at Florence. He held a tent meeting either in Sheffield or Tuscumbia, over somewhere in that part of the Muscle Shoals area of North Alabama. I later heard him on the lectureship here at Freed Hardeman. And as I said at the beginning of my speech, Brother Keeble always amused us by saying that he spoke promiscuously. He just spoke in a stream of thought. He didn't have a note or an outline with him. He would start talking, and whatever he said at this moment would suggest what he would say the next moment. Brother Goodpaster, who was a close friend of Keeble's, one time said that Keeble really just has one sermon. And that was right. Mm-hmm. If you ever heard Keeble preach, he just had one sermon. He might call it different things, but it was always salvation. And I have sometimes said, if a preacher just has one sermon, what better one could he have than the one about salvation? Mm-hmm. I doubt if anyone ever baptized more people than Marshall Keeble. Brother Goodpaster would give Brother Keeble a new suit every year around Christmas time. He'd call Brother Keeble up and ask Brother Keeble to come and visit with him at the Advocate, at the office. Keeble would come and they'd visit, and then Brother Goodpaster would say, "Well, now, Brother Keeble, I want you to stop by such and such men's store and pick up a suit that I have arranged there for you." Well, after a few years, Keble caught on. And he got to where he found it convenient to come by the advocate office every year just before Christmas. He didn't have to wait for Brother Good Pastor to call him, tell him about it. One year he showed up, and Brother Good Pastor said he thought he'd just string Keble along for a little while. He wouldn't say anything about the suit. So they talked and they talked and they talked, and he could tell that Keble was getting a little antsy and fidgety and ready to go. Good Pastor still didn't say anything about the suit. Finally, said Keble, started getting up out of his chair, rolled his eyes around as he could do, just the white of them showing. And he said, "Well, Brother Good Pastor, came by to get my new suit." Came by to get my new suit. In the winter of 1967, when I was preaching at Madison Street in Clarksville, we invited Brother Keble to come and speak one Wednesday night. Turned out there was a big snow on the ground and we had a very small crowd. Later that spring, Bethel Barrett Baxter came to preach in a week's meeting for us. And I suggested to our elders that on the Wednesday night before Brother Baxter begins his meeting, let's invite Brother Keble to come back and speak to a countywide meeting of all of the congregations. Let's invite every congregation in Montgomery County, Tennessee, to come here to the Madison Street building and hear Marshall Keble. I thought that would be a great event in and of itself, but I also thought it would be a great way to advertise our meeting the following week with Brother Baxter. So we did that, and I think our building would hold maybe 800 when we had over 1,000 people present the night that Brother Keble spoke. When the invitation was extended, 5 people responded to be baptized, 5 people responded to be restored. The next week, when Bethel Barrett Baxter came to hold the meeting, 15 people were baptized and 2 more were restored. So within about a 10 or 12 day period there, we had 20 baptisms into Christ and 7 restorations. I've often attributed the success of the Baxter meeting to Keble's appearance the Wednesday night before the meeting started. Steve Baggett, close friend of mine, preacher at the Walnut Street Church in Dixon, was about a 10 or 12 year old boy when Keble came. Steve was baptized during the Baxter meeting. A lot of the little boys, because of the crowded condition, sat up on the pulpit around the speaker. Steve told me that his distinct honor is that he has been spit on by Marshall Keble. Brother Keble would get to preaching and he'd go to sputtering, spitting. And Steve was sitting right there at his feet and was the beneficiary of all of it. Dr. J. Choate wrote an article for the Carolina Messenger that appeared in the July issue last year. This paper is edited by another one of our old schoolmates, David Farr. David, I see you're not associating with this bunch. I understand. Brother Choate told a number of interesting things about Brother Keble. I want to share, as I close today, some of these things. I'll mention another one. Keble did not hesitate to call names of denominational churches and what they believed, what they taught. He said, "My brethren sometimes criticize me for calling names." He said, "Jesus called names." He said, "If Jesus called names, it ought to be all right for me to call names." He said, "Jesus called Lazarus by name." He said, "If he hadn't, everybody in the graveyard would have gotten up." Keble said, "Jesus said that every plant which my heavenly Father hath not planted shall be rooted up." He said, "If you don't believe that, you just wait around till rooting time." Here's some things Brother Choate wrote. Marshall Keble became a legend in his own lifetime. His genius lay in his power to grasp ideas and facts to help his audience. His ability to present a Bible message through a simple story was a thing of joy and beauty. Keble said about this, "I can't explain my gift about. I cannot explain my gift no more than nothing." That's Keble talking. "While some people studied the Bible to memorize it, I studied it to reach people." Isn't that a great statement? Keble explained his preaching by saying that, like Jesus, he never spoke except through parables. "If I can't make a parable, I'm lost. For many years, Keble made annual visits to the Tennessee State Prison to preach to some 2,000 inmates. His irrepressible humor would be brought into play. "I make them feel like they're just visiting, that they're not in prison. I carry the sunshine to them. I go into the crooks and corners." I think he probably meant nooks and corners. But he said, "I go into the crooks and corners. I call names sometimes. God deliver me from a hinting preacher." The prisoners would get a little peeved when Keble would say, "These guards are your friends." And they both would laugh. The prison authorities told him, "Prisoners talk about you until the next year rolls around." Marshall Keble was a fine gentleman with indescribably gentle courtesy. Keble explained, "You've got to study people to get along with them. You even got to study your wife." That's a good message for us husbands, isn't it? You even got to study your wife. Keble said, "Some of my brethren are like dogs. You have to pet this one to keep him from biting that one." There's no end to Keble's stories. He was holding a meeting in California, doing his typical kind of preaching of exposing denominational error. And a young man said to Keble, "You have spoken about every other church. Now what about mine?" Keble said, "I don't know what church you are a member of." The young man responded, "The Latter-day Saints." Keble shot back, "You're too late." "You're too late. Can't be the church of the New Testament." Well, my time's up. Haven't left any time for questions, Brother Sam. Sorry about that. Didn't get to talk about Brother Nichols. Bunyan Augustus Nichols. That was his name. But he was known simply as Gus Nichols. Wish I'd had time to talk about him. I thank you for giving me the honor of speaking today at this luncheon.